Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following today's presentation, you will have the opportunity to ask questions, and at that time, you may press star then one on your phone's keypad to ask a question. Today's conference call is being recorded. If you have any objections to this, please disconnect at this time. Now, I will turn the call over to your host for today, Mr. John Ewald. Sir, you may begin.
Great. Thank you, Brad. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining today's call. My name is John Ewald with NOAA Fisheries Public Affairs Office in Silver Spring, Maryland, and I will be facilitating today's call. NOAA Fisheries is holding a press conference today to announce the joint release of two important reports, the 2015 Fisheries Economics of the U.S. Report and the 2016 Status of U.S. Fisheries Report. These reports contain the latest data and information that reveal the nation's progress in sustainably managing our marine resources. Here to discuss key findings from both reports is Alan Reisenhoover, who is the Acting Deputy Assistant Administrator for Regulatory Programs here at NOAA Fisheries. Alan's last name is spelled R-I-S-E-N-H-O-O-V-E-R. Following Alan's remarks, we will hold a question and answer session. Joining Alan in Silver Spring are Doug Lipton, a Senior Research Economist for NOAA Fisheries. We have Rita Curtis, the Division Chief for Economics and Social Analysis with NOAA Fisheries Office of Science and Technology, and also Kelly Dennett, Division Chief for Domestic Fisheries, NOAA Fisheries Office of Sustainable Fisheries. The two reports are available online for viewing at NOAA.gov's News and Feature page. The reports can also be found on NOAA Fisheries' website, which is www.fisheries.noaa.gov. If you have trouble locating or accessing the reports, please email me during or after the call at john.ewald@noaa.gov. Again, that's John, J-O-H-N, dot Ewald, E-W-A-L-D, at noaa.gov. Now I will turn the call over to Alan. Alan, you may begin.
Thanks, John, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm pleased to announce, as John indicated, the release today of two important NOAA reports, both of which measure the progress America has made in ending overfishing, rebuilding overfished stocks, and helping our fishermen and fishing communities succeed. This progress is possible thanks to the Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Conservation and Management Act, America's fisheries law for more than 40 years. The Magnuson Act directs the work of NOAA Fisheries and established the nation's eight regional fishery management councils. These councils, which are made up of commercial and recreational fishermen, the states, and others, develop fishing rules and harvesting quotas through a collaborative and transparent process. The first report I'll be discussing measures the broad economic impact that U.S. commercial and recreational fisheries achieved in 2015. The second report covers the year 2016 and provides an update on the status of domestic fish stocks and the progress the councils and NOAA are making to end overfishing and rebuild overfished stocks. So I'll get started now, and I'll leave plenty of time for questions at the end. The first report, Fisheries Economics of the U.S. for 2015. According to the report released today, the U.S. commercial and recreational fishing industries generated $200 billion in sales, contributed $97 billion to the gross domestic product, and supported 1.6 million full and part-time jobs in 2015. These 2015 figures are very close to the record-setting year the U.S. had in 2014 and reflect an overall positive trend in economic impacts between 2011 and 2015. Let's start with some of the commercial highlights. So including imports, U.S. commercial fishing and the seafood industry generated $144 billion in sales in 2015. This was a 6% decline from the previous year, and supported 1.2 million jobs, which is a 15% decline from 2014. However, it's important to remember these figures are still above the five-year average. In fact, 2015 represents the second highest level during that period. It's also important to recognize that there are other forces that affect our fisheries across the U.S. For example, West Coast fishermen face challenging factors such as the warm blob we've all heard about, El Nino, and marine toxins. These affected the Pacific marine environment and affected species like salmon. In the Gulf of Mexico, shrimp landings decreased due to high inventories, dampening the prices for both domestic harvest and imports. For the recreational fisheries, saltwater recreational angling remains a substantial contributor to tourism and the national economy. These activities generated $63 billion in sales across the economy in 2015, which is up 5% from 2014. Job impacts in the marine recreational industry remained steady for 2014 at 439,000 jobs. The top five states for recreational fishing job growth in 2015 were Mississippi, Connecticut, South Carolina, Washington, and Alaska. In sum, NOAA and the councils will continue to work to ensure U.S. fish stocks are a major economic engine for our coastal communities. Let's turn now to the status of U.S. fisheries for 2016 report. In our partnership with the eight regional councils, our progress in rebuilding stocks has continued. The number of stocks on the overfishing and overfished lists remain near all-time lows. And just to help with terms, I'd like to remind folks that a stock is on the overfishing list when the catch rate is too high. A stock on the overfished list means the population size of a stock is too low, whether because of fishing or other causes such as environmental changes. While there were no changes to the list of overfished stocks in 2016, we're pleased to report that two stocks were rebuilt, Albacore in the North Pacific and Barndoor Skate in the southern New England, Georges Bank area. This brings the total stocks rebuilt since the year 2000 to 41. Four stocks were removed from the overfishing list and six stocks were added. This not only highlights the progress in ending overfishing, but also the dynamic nature of fisheries management in the U.S., where new stocks are identified as subject to overfishing. But based on the best available science, the councils in partnership with NOAA will be working to set limits to end this overfishing on these newly identified stocks and ensure they are sustainable in the future. At the end of 2016, the overfishing list includes 30 stocks, or about 9% of all stocks, and the overfished list includes 38 stocks, or about 16% of all stocks. And the fact sheet, or the report itself, lists all these stocks if you want to look at the 30 and 38 stocks. But to conclude here, let me put this another way. In total, when we look at the 474 stocks reviewed, over 90% are not subject to overfishing, and nearly 85% are not overfished. So in conclusion, I'd like to stress that the findings of these two reports highlight the economic success that can be achieved using sound science, innovative management approaches developed by the regional fishery councils, effective enforcement, meaningful partnerships with states and others, and our robust public participation. Under the Magnuson-Stevens Act, the United States has become an international leader in fisheries management. Our dynamic science-based management process is proving successful in ending overfishing and rebuilding stocks, and in helping us attain significant benefits for the U.S. economy. I'll turn it back to John now, and we'll have a Q&A session.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. We will now take specific questions from call participants. Operator Brad, will you please remind participants how they can ask a question?
Certainly. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star then one on your phone keypad. Please unmute your phone and record your name at the prompt. If at any time your question has been answered, you may remove your request by pressing star two. Once again, that is star one if you would like to ask a question at this time. Please stand by, sir. And I do see at least a couple questions coming in. One moment. Our first question is coming from Patrick Whittle. Your line is open.
Yes, hi. Thank you very much. Could you possibly address the role that climate change is playing in sort of changes to the dynamics of fisheries management in the era that we live in? I would love to hear a little bit about how that plays a role in projecting the health of different kinds of stocks.
Certainly. Thanks, Patrick, for that question. Yeah, the climate plays a big role, the environment in particular. And I mentioned a couple things in my statement there that, you know, changing water temperature and other changing environmental conditions do affect the fish stocks in a number of ways. It may change the abundance, how many are out there. It may change how they reproduce, where they reproduce, and how successful they are at reproducing. It also changes where they live. So we see some stocks that are moving perhaps north for colder waters or perhaps moving offshore for deeper water, which may be cooler. So there's a variety of effects as we see these changes around the country. What the councils and the agency are doing is we're watching that movement, trying to plan ahead on how to best manage those stocks as they move, but also increasing the science associated with our stock assessments. What are these effects on the fish? What do they mean? And how does that affect the abundance? All with an eye toward making sure we're effectively managing those stocks. So thank you for that question.
Next question, please.
Once again, if you would like to press or ask a question, please press star then one. Our next is from Michael Nunes. Your line is open.
Hi, yes. I was wondering if you could address the health of the commercial and recreational fishing industry in New Jersey specifically, as well as the health of the summer flounder stock.
Okay, well, on the summer flounder stock, some of our recent assessments have showed that stock needs to have a cut in the annual catch. And the councils and another group, the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, are looking at that. And, in fact, the Atlantic States Commission will be talking about summer flounder this week. So I'd encourage you to go to the commission site to see the outcomes of that. As far as specifics of New Jersey, I don't know that we have those at hand, but I think our detailed report may have a little bit more information on at least the Mid-Atlantic or New Jersey. I'll turn to Dr. Curtis here for a...
I'm sorry, I misheard you, Michael. Was it Mid-Atlantic or were you asking nationally?
Only for the Mid-Atlantic region.
Only for the Mid-Atlantic. Overall, the Mid-Atlantic was a pretty did pretty well in 2015. I think it may have been the only region to have a substantial bump up in landings. Of course, not all fisheries went up. But blue crab was up, scallops and menhaden as well were up. So there were some bright spots for the Mid-Atlantic, and so overall they did well.
Yeah, and I would just add, Michael, that in the Mid-Atlantic there's only one stock subject to overfishing, and that is summer flounder, and no stocks are overfished. So thank you for that question.
Oh, well, thank you.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one at this time and record your name at the prompt. Our next question is from Heather Goldstone. Your line is open.
Hi. My question – can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
Excellent. My question is about the status of progress in New England specifically and how this rather optimistic economic report squares with fishermen who are saying that they're being put out of business by regulations at this point.
And thank you for that. Well, yes, there are some challenges in New England where we have some stocks that have been overfished and subject to overfishing for a number of years. The council has been working on that, reducing some annual catch limits over the years, and occasionally increasing some catch limits. So it's been a mix. As far as the economics go, the scallop fishery, I believe, still drives a lot of the value in New England, as well as lobster. So, yes, I think in New England in particular, you've seen some of these environmental changes we mentioned, and that affects some stocks. and perhaps not others. So it's a mix of making sure we have good science to put in good management measures so folks can harvest as much as they can of a stock while it remains sustainable.
I think you mentioned on the economic side that lobster was up, and that's really been a strong point for New England. It was up over $40 million, from 2014 to 2015, and up 55% since 2006. So that's been a really good news story in New England, and especially for Maine in particular. So it just depends on which fisheries you're looking at. Some did extraordinarily well, I would say, and then there were others that were more challenged.
Thank you for the question.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. And as a reminder, this call is for working media only. We will not be taking stakeholder questions at this time. Our next question is for Nora Flaherty of Maine Public Radio. Your line is open.
Hi, yes. I appreciate the comments about New England. Could you speak specifically to the results of these reports in Maine?
Okay. On status of the stocks, there are several Maine-related species, such as Atlantic cod, windowpane flounder, thorny skate, that are still either listed as subject to overfishing or overfished. So, again, some stocks are in good shape, others not so much. The council is trying to take action, and I'll see if Rita has some Maine numbers for us.
Yeah, so American lobster, again, drives the Maine fisheries, and Maine lobster was up, again, about $40 million. Prices were up, I'll say about 10%. So that was the good news there. Softshell clams were up. Really across the board, blue mussels, bloodworms, across the board, there was a lot of good news for Maine.
So thank you for that. And there are some fairly detailed tables in the report that folks can look at. And always, after you have some time to look through that report, if you have questions, get in touch with John or our public affairs staff here, and we'll get some more detailed, specific answers for you. But thanks.
And once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one, and record your name at the prompt. One moment, please. Again, that is star one if you would like to ask a question.
And perhaps if I could, while folks were thinking of questions, we had a couple questions on climate and environmental variability. In the highlights of the economics report, we do have a page that highlights three or four examples of that. That folks can look at to get a better idea of some of the specifics. So I would point you all toward that.
This is John Ewald. I'm not showing any more questions, but we'll stay on the line for just another few moments. It's star one if you would like to ask a question.
Our next question comes from Carrie Sheridan of AFP. Your line is open.
Oh, thank you for taking my question. I was wondering if you could elaborate a bit on the success of the two species that came off the list, the barn door skate and the albacore.
Absolutely, and thanks for that question, Carrie. As you can see, both of these had in particular barn door skate, a level of their stock that was low for a long time. And you can see in about 2004 or 5 that increasing. So I think for a number of these, it's the continued effort of the councils to put in measures that balance the needs of the industry to harvest fish and the needs of the fish to make sure that their catch limits are such that they can either rebuild or be sustainable. Definitely in the case of barn door skate, also in the case of North Atlantic albacore, our science continues to improve. So we're always getting better and better information to help us predict the size of the stocks and also how much of those stocks we can allow people to harvest. And I think you can see with the albacore example that we also have to work internationally to make sure that those stocks that U.S. fishermen fish for, as well as international vessels fish for, that we work internationally to make sure that the whole quota is set at a level that keeps the stock healthy or rebuilds the stock and also is fair to the U.S. fishermen. Thank you for the question.
Thanks.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one. Our next is from Bruce Ritchie of Politico Florida. Your line is open.
Hi, I'm just joining the call kind of late. I apologize if this has been asked, but can you talk at all about what you're seeing for Florida? It looks like perhaps landings have been going down for somewhat steadily. Actually, it seems to be up and down a little bit since about 2006. Are there any general trends you all are seeing there? Thank you.
Are you looking – I'm sorry, this is Rita Curtis. Are you looking at East Florida or West Florida? Because we actually report them separately.
Well, I'm looking at West Florida at the moment, but either or both is what I'm interested in.
So overall, landings revenue in 2015 for the state was $192 million, which is down about $12 million from the previous year, but it's higher than – the rest of the time series. So I would say that the fishery or the state commercial fishery is doing really well. A slight downtick from last year, but last year was a bit higher than most other years. So I wouldn't say that it's a cause for concern.
Okay. Grouper, snapper, oysters, those are big species.
Oysters were up. Oysters were up about 10%. I want to make sure I tell you the right information. Grouper was down, but red snapper was up substantially, about 25% in 2015.
Thank you very much.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one at this time and record your name at the prompt. Our next question is from Michael Nunes of Ocean Star Newspaper, New Jersey. Your line is open.
Hi, how's it going? I once again want to touch on the summer flounder shock in the mid-Atlantic region. Specifically, I want to ask the causes that led it to be overfished.
Well, I think it's probably a combination of things. There could be some environmental changes that the stock didn't reproduce as well, and we didn't catch that in time to maybe reduce the catch limits early enough. But fish stocks, I think, folks that have been around fisheries, you see them kind of go up, you see them go down. Sometimes they have good recruitment years, sometimes they don't. So the cause is really hard to put a finger on. So what we've been trying to focus on is how do we manage? And that's the benefit of the council system, is we have a group of folks there that are experts that give us advice on how do we best manage the stock year to year. So right now with this downturn in summer flounder stock size, we're working with the commission, as I mentioned earlier, to put in some measures that reduce that catch so we can make sure that stock is healthy into the future and does not become overfished.
What could be the effects if it is overfished in the future?
Well, when a stock is overfished, again, that means the population is too small, and the first thing we need to do is make sure we're not catching too many fish each year. So the commission and the councils are trying to get ahead of that right now by reducing catches. But once it is overfished, they would put in a rebuilding plan to rebuild that stock over time. And that doesn't mean we'd stop fishing for summer flounder. What it means is we'd just be very careful about those catch limits to make sure we're increasing the overall stock size over time to make sure it gets rebuilt so we can have a sustainable fishery in the future.
Okay, and one last thing, actually. I just want to know exactly how vital actually is summer flounder to the recreational and commercial fishing industries in the Mid-Atlantic states.
I think in the Mid-Atlantic it's a very important species. I know recreationally it's one of the premier target stocks that people go out and fish for, you know, individually or on charter vessels, and it also supports a pretty good commercial fishery, and I think Rita may have some numbers for us.
Yeah, in the Mid-Atlantic region, summer flounder is about a $14 million fishery, which is I'm not going to get the percentage that it is of the overall quickly. It doesn't round very easily, but it's less than 10% of the overall fisheries. But for those fishermen that actually do fish for it, it's been a good source of income. It's a well-priced species, so they get a good return for their landings, and definitely strong demand for it. That's something they can count on.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
And once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one and record your name at the prompt. Please stand by.
Well, while we wait for any final questions, I'd like to give any of our speakers here an opportunity to make a closing remark.
Well, I think for the commercial fisheries, you know, we did see that landings revenue were down in 2015, but basically that was a combination of environmental forces and environmental variability and market forces. There were just some species that globally market prices were down, and that affected both our import prices as well as prices that we got for our domestic harvest. So there was a lot going on in 2015. It was a strong year. You know, 2014 was considered a banner year, so it's not surprising it's a little down, but basically a strong year overall for the commercial fishermen. And recreationally also, again, a good year for the recreational fishermen and for hire fleet.
And I would just add to that by saying thanks to everybody that joined in, and thank you for your interest. And I think these two reports really point out kind of two real important key parts of what we do here at the Fisheries Service and with the eight regional councils. And that's one is we manage the stocks for kind of the biological, ecological side, and you get an idea of the health of those stocks through the status of the stocks report. And then you also get an indication of the health of the economics associated with those fisheries and the importance of those fisheries to our local communities, whether that be commercial, recreational, and in many areas it's both. And as Rita pointed out, this was a good year, and we're hoping to keep that upward trend going on the economics associated with it. But these two reports being released together, I think, give you a good indication of sustainability both from a economic side and an ecological side. So thank you again for joining, and I think if you have any questions in the future, please get a hold of John or our public affairs folks.
Great. And showing no more questions in the queue, thank you, Brad, for your assistance, and thank you all for participating in today's call. If you have any further questions or follow-up requests, you can email me at john.ewald@noaa.gov. Again, that's John, J-O-H-N, dot Ewald, E-W-A-L-D, at noaa.gov, or call us at 301-427-8003. Again, that's 301-427-8003. That said, this concludes today's call. You may disconnect at this time.
Thank you all for participating in the conference call. At this time, all parties may disconnect from the conference.